This is Valley Edition. I'm Carrie Klein. Susan Graham is white, but her children's father is black. And while raising her now adult children, she noticed there wasn't a biracial option for them to choose on their school and medical forms. Since then, she's helped change that. Graham also founded Project Race, or Reclassify All Children Equally. The activist and Los Banos resident joins FM 89 reporter Monica Velez to talk about her recent memoir, Born Biracial, How One Mother Took on Race in America.
In the beginning of your memoir, there's this moment where you suddenly have to start thinking about your children's race when the U.S. Census form arrives. Tell us more about that moment.
Well, when I received my 1990 census form, I realized that there was no place on the form for my children's races. You had to pick only one race, and I couldn't do that because my children are black and white. So I called the Census Bureau, and they kept putting me on hold and telling me that they didn't know what the answer was. Finally, they came back and said, the children take the race of the mother. And I said, why arbitrarily the mother? Why not the father? And his voice became very hushed, and he said, because in cases like these, we know who the mother is and not the father. And that incensed me so much that that's the reason the Project Race started.
So in the book, you know, there's a lot of terms mentioned, like multicultural, multiracial, biracial, bicultural. Can you kind of explain that more and what terminology might be better used?
I think the terminology is extremely important. Depends on what you call a child, and the child needs to know that there's a word for them. Multiracial people are asked all the time, what are you? And what that question means is, what race are you? And for a multiracial child to be able to answer very confidently, I'm biracial or I'm multiracial, makes a difference in them knowing who they are, which is extremely important for our children. We don't use the term mixed at Project Race, and the reason we don't use it is because it lends itself to mixed up, mixed nuts, that kind of thing that we see as newspaper headlines when talking about multiracial people. And also, I thought about it one day and thought that mixed is the opposite of pure. And I don't think we want to go there. I don't think we want to separate people in America by being pure and not pure. So biracial and multiracial are the two designations that we prefer.
And on your journey trying to find out why there wasn't a box for multiracial people, you write about how one person told you that what you were doing was really dangerous. So why was that?
Well, he said that it was dangerous because it was dismantling the one-drop rule in America. And the one-drop rule says if you have one drop of black blood, you're black. And we don't believe that's true. And we believe that you can be more than one race. And so that's why he thought that it was dangerous to do what I was doing, because it had been kind of the law for so long.
And how did the multiracial movement start in this country? And how did the organization you started, Project Race, play a role in that movement?
Well, we started the movement, and nothing was being done before we came on the scene. Very little was being done. I think Berkeley, California had interracial on their school forms, but that was about it. So we just dug in. When we started Project Race, I basically knew nothing about politics. And I learned very quickly, and there was a woman in Cincinnati who was trying to get a bill passed to put multiracial on school forms. And I found her, and together we started Project Race. And our first legislation that was passed was in the state of Ohio that mandated that multiracial be put on the school forms. And then we went to other states, and it's really a grassroots movement. You know, we started locally, we started in our own backyards, we started at our own schools, and we bubbled up to finally get to Washington and influence the Washington lawmakers and the census people.
And so what ended up happening in your fight to get multiracial as a box on in the census forms?
What we got was the ability to check more than one race, which we accepted as it was a compromise. They didn't want to just have a multiracial box, and we wanted more than having to check just one race. So we compromised with the Census Bureau and got the ability to check more than one race. The distractors from the movement, or the people who didn't want us to do this, they claimed that their races would lose numbers because people would jump to the multiracial category. That's not actually what happened. People who use the multiracial category used to use a category called other. So they jump from other to multiracial or checking more than one. They don't jump from necessarily black or Asian to suddenly being multiracial. The other thing that we got that is extremely important is the ability to self-identify who you are. Used to be, if a parent didn't designate a race for their child, a teacher was told to pick a race for that child based on her observation and knowledge of the child. So the teacher could pick whatever they wanted to call the child on the education forms. So data was really messed up in this country. With my son, he was considered to be black at school, white on the census, and multiracial at home. Anybody can look at that and say, data is really messed up. Something had to be done. So we set out to do that.
And how'd you end up living in the Valley?
I married someone who grew up in Los Banos.
And, I mean, I know that a lot of your work started in Georgia, but did you see any similarities between what you were doing in Georgia over here to the Valley?
I think that people in California were more open to talking about it, to discussing it. It wasn't, you know, the kind of old South that we ran into sometimes in Georgia, although Atlanta was very progressive, I think, in doing this. Georgia was one of our states that passed multiracial legislation. California is one of our states that is a sponsor of Multiracial Heritage Week. People think that California be easier than the South, but we have, for Multiracial Heritage Week, for example, we have California, we have Texas, we have Hawaii, Ohio, Colorado, so many states that are coming to support multiracial people. We can't say that it's just one geographical area.
And throughout the memoir, you write about how being a longtime activist took a toll on your personal relationships. What was it like going through that? And why do you think it's so difficult to find that balance between work and your personal life?
I think for me, work became my personal life because I was talking about my children and wanting to do what was right for my children. And I couldn't just separate my work life from my personal life. It became one. And it took its toll in different ways. And father of my children and I are divorced, and I've remarried. And so I think a lot of that happened because of working as an advocate. Advocacy work is extremely difficult. One of the reasons I wrote the book was so that people will, you know, learn how to be advocates, learn from my successes and mistakes, what to do if you want to make change in this world and what not to do. So it's kind of a primer for advocates.
And what's next for Project Grace? Are you going to continue your activism work?
Hopefully. I was thinking about it this morning because now we're getting into Multiracial Heritage Week. And I was thinking about it that we do this state by state, but it's just about time. I think after the next election, we'll try to get a presidential proclamation for the entire country. You know, we've done this for 6 years now, state by state, and it's time to go national. So that's hopefully what we'll be doing next.
We are speaking with Susan Graham about her memoir, Born Biracial, How One Mother Took on Race in America. She'll be at the Barnes & Noble tomorrow, June 8th, in Fresno for a book signing from 1 to 3 to kick off Multicultural Heritage Week. Thanks for being with us, Susan.
Thank you.